Okay, I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. We do have a quorum present. Representative Solberg, you've been studying the minutes. Do you want to make a motion and provide any other entertainment along with the motion?
I would so do so.
Okay, Representative Solberg moves the minutes of April 26th. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. We have four bills up this morning. This is a big part, apparently, of Representative Huntley's legislative agenda. He's the chief author of all four. But you have had another bill or two before us before, so we can't say it's your total agenda. So why don't we begin, Representative Huntley, with House File 655, the medical use of marijuana being authorized. Representative Huntley, if you could explain the bill.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to make my motion first?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 655, First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would move House File 655, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Okay, that motion is before us, and then the bill, Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, this certainly is a controversial bill. It's not supported by the most of the law community. It is, however, supported by a large percentage of the people in the state. It is supported by many medical organizations. Including, I wouldn't say that the bill is supported, but the Institute of Medicine, which is the premier national body on medicine, has the top research medical people in the country on this board, and they agree that there is a medical benefit to marijuana. And you can see the other organizations there, American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Academy of HIV Medicine, and various other groups support this bill. Basically, what it does is allow people that have a disease that causes chronic and intractable pain, if they can get an effective prescription from a physician, they would be allowed to use that marijuana in a private place that's not cannot be used in any public place, cannot be used in any public building. It has to be used only in private. The part of the controversy is that federal law does ban this, but the federal enforcement has almost never gone after someone that is using this because they're in a terminal condition or in a chronic pain situation. We've had just recently one of the people that's testified earlier this year has died from the disease they had, and the marijuana that they were using did alleviate some of the pain. The bill as it now stands does not allow the individual that that has the right to use this. It does not allow that person to grow any marijuana. The marijuana would only be grown by what's called a registered organization that would be registered at the Department of Health. The individual that had the prescription from a physician would have to get a card from the Department of Health as well to show that he was legally authorized to have this in his possession. Again, this is only aimed at people that have chronic, persistent, intractable pain. Most of these people, not all, but most are in a terminal situation, usually from cancer, although there are a number of other diseases that cause severe pain, and people can, in this bill, could be authorized to use that. As you know, Representative Swigum is a co-author of this bill, and he may wish to comment on it, but It's supported. The support is not by party. The support is basically by people that have known somebody that had a chronic condition that was in severe pain. Anybody that's seen a family member go through that situation understands what intractable pain is and understands the need for this. I'd be happy to answer any questions. There is a fiscal note, which I think is the purpose for this visit here. The fiscal note shows a net receipts of about $400,000 a year from two sources. One from the patients who would pay up to $100 a piece, and another source would be the registered organizations that are going to grow the marijuana. They would pay a fee of up to $1,000, and that would be both those would be administered by the Department of Health.
Okay, and any discussion then on the bill? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley. I find it very ironic that you both have the smoking ban bill and the medicinal marijuana bill. I think they're completely contradictory. So my question I'll limit to, I've got many, many questions and reservations about this bill, but I'll limit my question to 5.2, where it says, nothing contained herein shall require such facilities to adopt such restrictions, and no facility shall unreasonably limit a qualifying patient's access to or use of marijuana. So my question is, if I'm a nursing home worker or a hospice care worker, who's there to protect my rights from secondhand smoke? As we know, and as you testify, there are many, many dangers, and medicinal marijuana or any type of marijuana would have 10 times as many carcinogens as any cigarette.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, you'd have the same problem in nursing home because in the bill that's just passed, there's an exemption for people to smoke tobacco cigarettes in nursing homes. So you could have the same problem with that.
But Mr. Huntley, the point of the smoking ban was to protect workers' rights so that they didn't have to work in an environment with smoke. So I'm having a hard time reconciling how it's important to protect the rights of people who work at bars, but it's not as important to protect the rights of people who work at a nursing home or a hospice. So what is in here to guarantee the rights of someone who works at a nursing home?
Mr. Chair and the representative, as far as the tobacco part of this in nursing homes, that's a federal law we've had to accommodate in that bill. The federal law on tobacco says that persons in an institution like a nursing home have to be allowed a place in which they can smoke tobacco. That's a federal law, so when we pass the ban on smoking, we had to include that in the bill, and that is included in that bill, and I assume that the would make the same. Obviously, the federal government is not going to mandate that you have to allow people in nursing homes to smoke marijuana, but I think the workers' protection would be the same in both those cases, and that is a problem, but when people are dying and they're in severe pain, I think this is going to be a very rare situation, and I don't think the nurses' aides or other people are going to be exposed to significant amounts of marijuana smoke.
Going.
One more. Give us some time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Pepin, you obviously haven't smoked marijuana or been around anyone who is smoking marijuana. But I assure you, there is very little in the way of secondhand smoke. The instrument itself is a very tiny little, it looks almost like the butt of a cigarette. And the purpose of smoking it is to inhale it deeply into the lungs, and there's very little secondhand smoke.
A problem is that that wasn't the purpose for us.
But that's the You know, the problem with secondhand smoke is actually the cigarette that's burning in the ashtray, and that's a huge, terrible problem. If people would actually just deeply inhale cigarettes all the time, it wouldn't be anywhere near the health problem for other people.
Mr. Chairman, to that point.
Yeah.
You may ask
Mr. Chairman just to that point. Very
thanks, Representative Kahn. We now have several hands. The other day I asked her, before I recognized her, if she was going to be helpful.
You forgot to ask her this time.
I forgot to ask this time. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, a different question. I was just wanting to ask Representative Pepin. She claimed that there are, I think you said, 10 times as many carcinogens in medicinal marijuana. Can you tell me what your citation is for medicinal marijuana containing carcinogens, 10 times as many as a cigarette?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, maybe carcinogens wasn't the right word, but I've read in several places that the damages of marijuana are at least 10 times, and maybe it's probably tar and nicotine would be perhaps more accurate. I'm not sure what the correct language is, but I've read many medical reports where it says the damages of marijuana are at least 10 times worse than the damages of cigarettes.
Ms. Chair, I would just ask you to try to check on that before we get to the floor, because it's kind of a wild claim, and you know, maybe we can just have a discussion here and be done with it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, I find this conversation unbelievable that we're talking about marijuana in this. It's just completely unbelievable to me that we would even be discussing this in the Minnesota legislature.
Mr. Chairman, to follow up, you know, as a nurse, I have to say, I've sat with patients and friends, and even in the last year, who had cancer. They are cancer, hopefully at this point, survivors. I can think of one of them. And the only way one of these people could keep down any food so that she could stay alive to see her grandkids is kind of the way she thought about it, because she was wasting away, was to smoke medicinal marijuana. She didn't want to, but nothing else worked that the doctor prescribed for her. So I just want to say, you know, I think what we're talking about here is compassionate use for people who need to, in this case, one of the benefits is to overcome the nausea so that people can actually eat and keep down nourishment. So it's not, I don't think it's, you know, funny or lighthearted. It's a very serious, kind of compassionate effort that I think Representative Huntley is bringing forward, and it's got lots of safeguards in it, and I want to thank him for doing it.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, on page 4, it also in the nursing facilities area, it does say that they could put restrictions such that the marijuana be consumed by a method other than smoking. That usually is a vaporizer, so that there would be less. It's not really smoked in that case. And about the conflict between the two bills, Representative Pepin, I just think we should all do what our doctors tell us. And if our doctors tell us not to smoke, I don't think we should smoke. And if a doctor tells us, yes, we should use this to relieve pain, then I think we ought to do what our doctor tells us.
Interesting.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, and you know, Representative Kahn, to your point, I think obviously you've never smoked marijuana because if you, you know, never mind. I just know what I've read on the internet, Mr. Chairman. That's it. Representative Huntley, on page 1 of the bill, I'm just looking at the allowable amount of marijuana. And it says 2.5 ounces of usable marijuana. Now, again, knowing what I know just because of what I've read on the internet, that seems like a tremendous amount of weed. That seems like a lot of pot. I mean, 2.5 ounces? I'm just wondering if you could kind of give us, from an intent standpoint, how that number was arrived at, what the thought process was.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, and members, the amount, again, this is not an area in which I am an expert. I think this relates to, there are some federal Some patients are authorized by the federal government to have marijuana in their possession as a smoker for chronic pain. Probably not nearly as many, and I think the this number is about equivalent, or this amount is about equivalent to what the federal government would allow someone to have in their possession through that system. And that system, actually, the federal government, it grows the marijuana and packages it, turns it into cigarettes and distributes to a very small number of patients. And this amount is similar to what the federal government would do for those people.
Representative Grapple.
Just to, Representative Huntley, I will not be voting for your bill today, but I do understand the intent of your legislation, and I think it's reasonable. As someone who, you know, I think we have a lot of medicines, for example, morphine. And I think back to when I was in a hospital and I was administered morphine and given one of these pumps, and they turned me into a morphine addict in 4 days, and I didn't even realize it. And comparing that experience with the recreational use of marijuana, which, again, I only know about because of reading on the Internet, is, I guess, some of the concerns people have expressed might be a little bit over the top. But I will be voting against your bill today. Another question I had is regarding, on Subdivision 4, the definition of a debilitating medical condition. That would, this seems like a pretty open-ended definition, I guess, when I read it. I'm wondering if you could give us some thoughts of, again, where this language came from, if there's been, through the committee process, if there's been efforts to tighten this up, if that's been successful. Just your thoughts on that.
Mr. Chair, members, this has been looked at in many cases. These are diseases or conditions in which currently people are being prescribed marijuana in other states. It is tight, and again, you have to remember that a physician has to, in effect, write a prescription and has to answer to the medical board as to whether his prescribing is meets the medical code and the what the Board of Medical Practice would demand. And so it's the physician that's really has to watch it, because they could lose their license if they're doing inappropriate prescribing.
And Mr. Chairman, and Representative Huntley, specifically on Subdivision 2, or Paragraph 2, it describes a chronic or debilitating disease or medical condition or its treatment that produces one or more of the following. And it says, and one of the items here is intractable pain, which is pain that has not responded to ordinary medical or surgical measures for more than 6 months. And while I'm not a doctor, I don't know if there's a way that doctors can measure whether a patient is having pain or not, or intractable pain. So if, as a patient, if I insist that I'm having pain, it would seem I would then be eligible for that prescription, irrespective of whether or not I have that pain.
Mr. Chair and members, the that is not an unusual problem for a physician that has to deal with a patient in pain. There are, if they're going to prescribe OxyContin, they'd have the same kinds of decisions to be made at that, for that pain. So any they can prescribe morphine, as you know, and it's up to the physician to decide if the pain is sufficient to get a prescription for this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Cornish. Mr. Chair and members, we're sitting around here making light of a subject that is really, really serious. The law enforcement community has opposed this. I'm really sick to my stomach, up to my ears, hearing of all the people that this has helped out with that are in pain. Representative Clark, for every one person you sat with that has suffered through pain, I can show you 50-to-1 ratio of the people have been hurt by illegal drug use in this country, and it starts out in marijuana. Marijuana is a gateway drug, plain and simple. We're pouring millions, if not billions, of dollars nationwide into preventing the illegal drug use, and here we turn around and do a complete turnaround and make a headway into making it legal. And for those of you who think that this has got all the protections and you got your head in the sand, because I don't know if you understand the criminal mind or not, but they're out there right now trying to figure ways they can take advantage of this law. No sooner have we passed the protections and sued ephedrine, putting it behind the counter in the meth bill, that they were figuring out ways to get around it. That's what they do for a living. All the potheads out there that smoke this for fun are just probably in glee, knowing that there's one more way that they'll probably be able to get their hands on it now, just an inch way into this. And so there's all sorts of drugs, and I've sat with a number of people in pain from all sorts of different things and seen friends of law enforcement die of cancer and went through all those stories, and they impressed me, sure. There's a plethora of drugs out there to help you through pain. We don't need one more, and to help them make it illegal. And so I appreciate it if people would quit making light of this subject and chuckling about it, because there's probably law enforcement officers who have died in the line of duty trying to protect the public from drugs, and here we're sitting around making jokes about it. Almost every house you go into in a search warrant for illegal drugs, you're going to find marijuana. For almost every story you hear from a criminal about their drug use on TV or anywhere else, a documentary will tell you they started out on marijuana. And the benefit from the people that are being helped from this drug, being released from pain, don't outweigh the benefit that the people have of being protected from it and our children. And so, I don't know where this thing is going. I'm really disappointed that the Republican authors on this bill. I think it's an embarrassment that we would help make an illegal drug legal for the purpose of relieving somebody in pain. All the people are going to give into pain because of it, I hate to think about. So that's my tirade on the subject, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Spigen.
Trying to come to 10, Mr. Chairman.
I can do it for you.
I shouldn't. I think Representative Cornish looked at me when he said Republican author on the bill, and I'm very disappointed with his inconsistency. It would seem to me, Representative Cornish, if you were going to be against the statewide smoking ban, which you spoke eloquently against and were against, you should probably be for this bill. If you want big government out of your life, if you want to enhance physicians and enhance patients, the consistency would be, and I understand consistency is for small minds, I understand that, but you would want to support this bill. Members, the only thing I agree with Representative Cornish is that this is more than just a little laughing matter about the Internet or about who is wise in the use of marijuana or not. It's a little bit more serious than that, because we're talking about people in their lives, about pain in their lives. This seems to be, from the studies I've done, and understand, Mr. Chairman, I've done some minimal research. I haven't done great research. I will attest to that. But in minimal research, that it's a very reasonable and compassionate way to address some folks with severe pain in their life. Mr. Chairman, we have, the author, Mr. Huntley, has been very accommodating and very cooperative and compromising to law enforcement officials. Let me first up front say that law enforcement has significant concerns. And no matter what Mr. Huntley does in this bill to accommodate their concerns, they're not going to support the bill, no matter what. Yet Mr. Huntley has made some significant changes to the bill, addressing concerns of law enforcement, making this the tightest bill of any of the 12 states in the country that have passed medical marijuana. You've taken out reciprocity with other states, Mr. Huntley. You've taken out the no-grow-your-own provision. You've changed so you know intractable pain is a much tighter definition than what was originally in the bill. I think originally they talked about chronic pain. Mr. Huntley, is that not true? And you change it to intractable pain, which is a much tighter definition. You've increased the penalties. Members, if I in one thought, if I had any feeling at all that this was a move towards legalization of drugs or a enhancement of youth usage of drugs, I would not be on the bill. But if you study any of the states that have seen and used medical marijuana, the youth usage of marijuana has gone down in those states. Youth usage has gone down. Now, to be fair, it's gone down in every other state as well, but certainly in the states that have medical marijuana. And if you happen to believe, as I do, that health care reform, that Representative Cornish, your president, and I believe, is ought to be get government out of it and enhance physicians and patients. That's what the president said on his State of the Union address in January or February.
and that's what I believe, and that's what I think you believe, you should be supporting this bill.
We have an amendment that's necessary. Representative Coles, you wanted to comment generally on the bill, because we have an amendment that I was made aware of.
I want to do it, Mr. Chair. I just have one question for Representative Huntley.
Hey, Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley, I'm reading through the bill again. I've read it previously, and I see there are some changes. But Representative Huntley, I guess one of the concerns I continue to have is the manner in which somebody goes about obtaining the marijuana. I understand that the bill provides protections for possession. I understand the bill also provides for the registered entities, or whatever we're calling them, registered organizations. However, does the bill require that a person who has a condition that allows them to possess marijuana purchase the marijuana from one of these registered organizations? I don't see that in the bill. Could you help me out there?
Representative Huntley.
Well, certainly the intent is that that is where they would get the marijuana. Whether they just bought it on the street, I would assume that that is illegal. If you don't get it from a registered organization, then you will have violated the law. And the bill is quite clear that if you violate state law, you're still subject to those penalties.
Mr. Chairman, I would just note to Representative Huntley, I'm not sure the bill reads that way. I don't think the bill requires that you purchase it from a registered organization. I think it provides protection for possessing marijuana up to 2.5 ounces, but I don't believe it requires anywhere that you purchase it from a registered organization. So if somebody goes, and I sat in a public, in Representative Kamar's joint committee with the Senate, we heard the mayor of Minneapolis, who I often don't agree with, in fact, most often don't agree with, talk about the problems of marijuana in the city of Minneapolis and the fact that every time somebody goes and purchases marijuana on the street, they're contributing to a bullet going into the head of some kid in North Minneapolis. And it was very compelling testimony from the mayor about the problems with marijuana use in the city of Minneapolis. That's a concern I have, Representative Huntley. I'm absolutely sensitive and appreciative of the compassion that's at the heart of this bill, but I'm not sure that the balance is here, and I'm not sure, as Representative Cornish said, that the potential benefits outweigh the ongoing concerns that I have. I guess, Representative Huntley, I'm not going to support the bill today. I'm not sure that I would on the floor, but I guess I would ask you to look at that and be thoughtful about that as we move forward, because I think that is a big hole and a big issue with the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we have... Okay, Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, this is a kind of a clarifying question to one I asked earlier, and maybe there's someone from the Medical Association or someone that can answer it. Representative Kahn, since I will admit I know very little about pot smoking, like some others who have read it on the Internet, but I made a comment about how we're going to protect the workers from secondhand smoke, and I seem to get some pushback saying that there really wasn't a lot of secondhand smoke, so I guess I would like that clarified, and my follow-up question would be, could someone from the Medical Association please clarify to me whether or not there is secondhand smoke from marijuana? And then if there is secondhand smoke from marijuana, my concern would be, would people test positive if they were to, say, be in the military and, you know, be on guard duty? Is there a chance that they could, if they worked at the nursing home or whatnot, if they could test positive for drugs? So if I work consistently with someone who was taking medicinal marijuana, is there a chance that I could also test positive for drugs, THC, I believe, if I were in that environment? And I'm not sure, Representative Huntley, and not that I don't trust Representative Kahn's answer, but if there's actually someone from the Medical Association that could give me an answer I could have a little bit more comfort with, I'd sure appreciate that.
Representative Huntley, that question from up
there, I could
correct.
Yeah, I do not know the answer to that question.
Is there somebody from the Medical Association here that knows the answer to that question? No one is seemingly coming forward, so maybe that's a question you'll have to ask as Bill Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Representative Pepin, I spent 22 years in the military, and during that time was a legal officer as well for some time, and ended up prosecuting a lot of individuals for smoking marijuana. And one of the defenses is, through the studies, was that there is no amount of secondhand smoke that will register for positive on a urinalysis. So the basic premise is that you have to be the primary user in order to register for THC.
Okay, thank you. Representative Powell?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a defense. Right. Supervisor.
Yeah. I didn't know you were. Your name is on the list. Somebody
thank
else.
You, Mr. Chairman. Representative Huntley.
All the time.
Under, I think it's Section 5, where you have certain things that you're not allowed to do after smoking marijuana, I have two concerns. Let's just, and I'll take one scenario. A school teacher leaves the school grounds, and they are legally allowed to use marijuana. They come back to school, and they teach a class. Are they under the influence, and is that a right thing to do? And is there a way, when driving a vehicle, that you can measure whether you're under the influence, like with alcohol, we're 0.08. Is there a measurement with marijuana?
Again, it says that you're not supposed to be driving when you are using this drug, and I would assume the same sorts of things could apply to all kinds of other medicinal products that people use that would impair their driving ability, even over-the-counter stuff. You read the labels on the bottles, and most of them say, on certain types say that you should not use this before driving. I would think that the same thing would apply to the use of this. I don't know if there's any way to tell if someone's under the influence. There is a part in the bill on page 7 that says a person to does not permit a person to undertake a task under the influence of marijuana when doing so would constitute negligence, professional malpractice, or failure to practice with reasonable skill and safety. So if the result would be covered by that, then the bill does not protect the person from any prosecution for those kinds of things.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Huntley, I'm not going to support your bill today, but I could change my mind. I would like to have assurance that, be it a school teacher or anyone, be it a surgeon or a dentist, that could legally use this product and then perform an operation or do some dental work or teach children, that we have a way of measuring whether or not they're under the influence of marijuana. I would like you to bring something back in the bill or to the floor that rather than just saying you're naughty if you do it, I'd like to have a way to measure whether or not you are in fact using it. So if someone were to mention an incident in a classroom and possibly throw up an accusation to a teacher that they were under the influence, I think we need to find a way to measure it. And that would, you don't have to answer that, Representative Huntley. It's just what I'd like you to try and do.
Hey, Representative, you're here.
No, Mr. Chair, I will certainly try to find an answer to that question.
Representative
Hurd? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Representative Huntley, if this bill became law and the federal government pulled a raid like they've done on immigration affairs and arrested someone had put possession under what is Minnesota's law, who would be paying them? Is the state of Minnesota going to be paying them, or are we going to have to get them on the fees?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Earhart, the federal government has only rarely arrested people that were in the situation that would be covered by this bill. And they don't make a point of going after people that have a terminal illness and are using marijuana. On the other hand, if yes, it is in violation of federal law, and that would be dealt with in the federal courts, and the state has basically no role in that then.
Okay, we have an amendment then, that Mr. Marks had some conversation with the Department of Health, and they indicated that they needed an amendment dealing with the appropriation. It's now been distributed. Mr. Marks, if you could explain the amendment. And, it's my understanding that once this amendment goes on, your motion will need to be changed to re-refer it to Ways and Means. Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, members, Sections 4 and Section 9 raise the fees that Representative Huntley had described. In discussion with the Department of Health, we need those fees would not be appropriated under any other language to the Department of Health to administer this section, so we need to add that language, and this amendment would add that appropriation language in some as a new subdivision in Section 4.
Okay, Representative Sullivan?
Has somebody moved that amendment?
Not yet, if you'd like to move it.
I would move that, but I'd also like to incorporate it in a couple of other words in there, if I may. Okay. And that is...
Representative Solberg moves the amendment, and your suggestions then?
After the word appropriated on the third from the bottom line, insert the words in fiscal years 2008 and 2009. That will bring it back to the legislature then for review of the expenditure of the funds.
Okay.
And I'd like to incorporate those into my amendment.
We have it, so that's incorporated into the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carried. Okay, Representative Seifert, before we vote on the bill.
Mr. Chair, real quick, I just had a question. It's something that Representative O'Trem and I were talking about that was kind of funny that, I don't mean ha-ha funny, but there was, it says there's three FTEs in the third and ongoing years for registering, the registry database, processing paperwork, and issuing the registry cards. Do we have an idea of how many people that would request to sell this or to participate in the program?
Representative
Mr. Chair and Representative Seifert, the data, if you look at various states, varies all over the place. But you have to look at what their laws are and how strict they are. This is much stricter than practically any state that has done this. I think the best comparison is probably Colorado. They have a fairly strict law, and there's 200 or 300 people in the state of Colorado that have been authorized to smoke marijuana for medicinal purposes, and the population of Colorado is close to what Minnesota is. So I'm not looking at a large number of people. There are other states where the thing was put in by referendum, and there's probably some abuse and probably too many people using it in those states. But the states that have strict laws, the numbers are relatively small. I would anticipate there would be less than 1,000 people in Minnesota authorized to smoke marijuana.
Mr. Chair, in talking with one of the lobbyists, you know, they had said it would be a fairly limited amount of people. It's not going to be something really widespread, and I just thought, in the out-year biennium, 9.25 positions, there's going to be a lot of Maytag repairmen sitting around the Department of Health all day waiting for the phone to ring to hand out a registration card. Even if you take 365, that's one per day. I mean, I just, I don't know who has control over that, but it's just a cautionary thing for us to think about, that seems like a really high amount of FTEs for what really should be a minimal amount of number of people. If we make a mountain out of a molehill, you know, this bill's, I would guess, likely to pass, but I guess just for us to think about as a finance committee, or Representative Solberg maybe in Ways and Means if he's still here, to think a little bit about drilling down on what, you know, we've talked about FTEs and Ways and Means when I've served on it for years about kind of that traditional question, what are you going to do from 9 to 5 every day? I think that's a good question for nine people to be sitting around for what Representative Huntley would maybe, let's be generous and say that it's 1,000 people. I mean, what are these nine people going to do all day? And we, you know, as a legislature, Representative Earhart might have an idea, but, you know, I just think that we need to think about that a little bit, maybe put a cap on the FTE. Sometimes we give wish lists out to agencies, and they just keep hiring people and hiring people. And so that's just my thought for maybe ways and means to think about that, Representative Solberg. I don't know that we need to do it right now.
Quality assurance, Representative.
The other thing is, I'm sure that, one, you've got some professional managers that I would hope would be managing the agency appropriately, and if they don't need that number of people, the positions would go unfilled, or they would be assigned to do other tasks in the department if it didn't require a full-time person. But being that it's the first time, it would be pretty hard to predict accurately exactly what the hours would be, but to make a good point, I think perhaps some oversight. We have Representative Solberg, and then we will, I think, renew the motion and hopefully vote. Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chair, just very quickly, Representative Seifert, that's the reason for my review at the end of the 2 years.
Okay, we have Representative Cornish.
Just, first of all, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote, and secondly, a couple clarifications.
On the Solberg Amendment?
Are we on the amendment of the bill?
We haven't adopted the amendment yet, so you requested a roll call.
Okay, go ahead. I withdraw that.
Did we adopt it?
We did.
I was paying attention to other things. Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chair, a couple of...
So your request for a roll call on passage is before us. Okay.
And a couple of comments. Representative Clark, I didn't mean anything, and when I was barking at people to think that you weren't a kind and caring, compassionate woman, you are, and get that straight. So, and you've shown yourself to be. Representative Swigum, instead of being embarrassed, I'll just change it to upset with you. And we both have our differences, and you'll be upset at me at other things, too. So, and then the roll call vote, and Mr. Chair, because I believe it is a serious matter, and naturally, with my connection with law enforcement and dealing with this drug for years and years, I think it's important we have a roll call vote.
Okay, and that's been requested. Representative Huntley renews his motion, and at House File 655, the first committee engrossment as amended to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by... Okay, 8 o'clock meeting. We'll take the roll.
Carlson?
Aye.
Anderson?
No.
Clark?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Earhart?
No.
Vinson? Garofalo?
No.
Dreiling? Hackbar?
Aye.
Hausman?
Yes.
Filty?
Yes.
Howes?
No.
Huntley?
Yes.
Yarrow.
I'm sorry, yes.
Duncan?
Aye.
Kahn?
Yes.
Falk?
No.
Lanchesky? Leader? Mahoney?
Aye.
Mariani?
Yes.
Murphy?
No.
Otrimba?
No.
Tamar?
Yes.
Halsky?
Yes.
Pepin?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Riccovino? Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
No.
Thurditch?
Yes.
Severson?
No.
Simon?
Yes.
Slavik? Solberg?
Yes.
Swigum?
Yes.
Thiessen?
Yes.
Lufinius?
Yes.
Walker?
Yes.
Westrom?
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it seems easy to think.
Okay, there were 20 ayes and 14 noes, so the motion carries. Passes. Representative Huntley, we now go to your second bill on the agenda. Members, just For the, I don't know if the Republicans are caucusing this morning or not, the House DFL is at 9:30. So what we'll do is get as far as we can up until 9:30 with the agenda, and we do have some room on the agenda tomorrow, so if we have any bills that we don't complete in the next half hour, we'll just add to the agenda for tomorrow morning. Representative Huntley. We need Representative Clark. Is she here? Oh, Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance Division's report of House File 298, the second committee endorsement.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, and members, this is the...
We'll need your motion on Representative Huntley moves House File 298, the second committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. And then Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment, or this bill rather, now has no finances in it. It's simply language. It had finances originally, but those were taken out and put in the omnibus bill. What it does is allow family planning clinics to have a nurse dispense oral contraceptives. Currently, that should be, normally it would be done by a pharmacist or a physician or a nurse practitioner. This allows a registered nurse in a family planning clinic to dispense oral contraceptives. This is not opposed by the pharmacist. Is not opposed by the Board of Pharmacy. The second thing it does is allow nonprofit community health clinics providing family planning services to be defined as a governmental unit so that they can enter into joint power agreements to purchase drugs at a discount.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley, we have then Senate File 1959, formerly House File 1984, the returning of unused drugs. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, this relates to basically county-run jails. And currently, if there's a person in jail, he needs drugs, and there is a prescription. The prescription is sent to a local pharmacy. The pharmacy delivers the drugs to the jail facility, where the drugs are always under the control of the correctional officers in the jail. The patient only gets a he needs a pill once a day. He's given one pill a day. If he needs to take it four times a day, each time that pill is given to him at the appropriate time by the correctional facility officer, so that at no time does the person in jail really have possession of the drugs. They're always kept locked up in a proper place, and the correctional officers are trained on how to first of all store drugs and how to keep them locked up. So what we're talking about then is if the prisoner is discharged and there's drugs left over in the safe, that those drugs, if they're still packaged correctly, can be returned to the pharmacy and the county gets a rebate on that drug from the pharmacist. This there's no fiscal note for the state, but there's a several $1 million effect on counties. They always used to be able to do this, but the Board of Pharmacy changed some rules, and they were prevented from doing this recently. This bill is supported by the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Inter-County Association, the Local Public Health Association, and the Minnesota Sheriff's Association.
Okay, and Representative Huntley, we'll need you to move the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the, what is my notice here? Proper language.
Senate file 1959. First engrossment be recommended.
First engrossment be recommended to pass and referred to
General Register. Okay, the motion is before us, and in Representative Junkie, did you have an amendment?
Well, I guess I should move it. I didn't know it was mine.
I've got your name on the amendment here,
all right.
But it says Junkie.
Okay,
Representative Junkie moves the H-1984A1 amendment. Representative Junkie.
And this addresses a problem with some of our pharmacies, in particular the one we've heard about, I think, from lobbyists is Thrifty White, who packages their prescriptions in our area in Moorhead, I believe, Fargo-Moorhead, and then ships them out to nursing homes and other places through our other pharmacies, and they're the ones that are certifying the prescription, but through a Board of Pharmacy ruling, it is saying that now that I believe, if I'm explaining this right, Representative Tremba knows this too, that we'd have to recertify as they come through our local towns and other things, costing an awful lot of money. So this basically explains that that is not necessary, but I'd let Representative Tremba explain it further.
I had both names on the amendment here, Chunky and Tremba, so Representative Tremba. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. What happens is they do mostly nursing homes, and they're in these packages that are they're each individually packaged in a program. So when they don't need the product, you send it back to the retailer, and in this case, it goes back to Fargo. So then they have to re-look at it, which doubles the cost for the pharmacies. So, and it's about $1.3 million that it would cost them having them certified twice. So that's the problem.
Okay, Representative Hundley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I'm neutral on this amendment. I'll do what you want, but I think the Board of Pharmacy has a position on it.
Okay, is there someone from the Board of Pharmacy that wants to answer that question? I guess the question is, what is your position on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Dr. Cody Weiberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Pharmacy. And I would say that the Board of Pharmacy could not be more strongly opposed to this amendment. When the original bill came up, we were opposed to that. We're kind of reconciled with the fact that we think it's going to pass. I was asked at the policy committee hearing about the bill. I was asked a question that I had to truthfully answer, which is, in terms of drugs being returned from counties, did the board have any evidence that any harm had come to any consumers? And I answered truthfully, no, the board did not have any evidence. However, we do have evidence that if this amendment passes, consumers will be hurt. And the reason that we have that evidence is this. This amendment goes to one of the rules that, this is not a recent rule. The rule has been on the books for at least the last quarter of a century since I was in pharmacy school myself in the early 80s. It's the certification rule. It basically says that one pharmacist at the end of the process has to take responsibility for the entire process from the beginning to the end. We have actually offered to work with Thrifty White on their particular model to grant them a variance to this rule. Because we happen to agree with their particular model, it would make sense to have the pharmacist in their central facility do the certification. The trouble with this amendment is Thrifty White's model is only one of many. And the board, about 9 months ago, granted a variance to this rule to allow another type of model out there. And in the 9 months that's been on the, that we've allowed this other pharmacy to not have a pharmacist at the end of the chain verifying the prescription, we have investigated over a half a dozen complaints involving dispensing errors, two of which involve patients taking the medications and having adverse reactions. So I understand what Thrifty's issue is. We offered to work with them to give them a variance, to the rule because it makes sense in their case, but it does. This is not one size fits all, and so we strongly oppose this.
Okay, thank you.
Could we have the other person come and testify?
I'm having difficulty hearing you, Representative.
I'm sorry. Could we ask the person that represents Thrifty Drugs to come up and give their side of the story also?
They want to just simply answer the question why they support it. I guess we...
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Buzz Anderson. I represent the Minnesota Retailers and also Thrifty White Drug. Thrifty White Drug has pharmacies primarily in rural Minnesota and in many of your communities, and they primarily serve nursing homes. We objected to this rule when it was brought before the Board of Pharmacy last fall, in large part because a pharmacist at the Central Fill in Fargo actually goes through the certification process. That is, they check to make sure that the prescription is accurate. Then it goes back to the pharmacy, which distributes it to the local nursing home, and the rule requires the local pharmacist to check it once again. That will cost Thrifty White $1.3 million. We don't argue with certification. We think drugs should be certified. We do think that they should be safe. My argument with Mr. Weiberg is if another pharmacy is doing it incorrectly, then they should no longer be licensed to do Central Fill. Thrifty White does this correctly. So this is really a sledgehammer going after everybody when Thrifty White does it correctly. So my suggestion would be you ought to pass the amendment and the Board of Pharmacy should rather go after those pharmacies that aren't doing it correctly.
Okay, and the author said he was neutral on the amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? And by the way, I do have to make a couple of suggestions that Representative Junkie and Otremba will incorporate, and that's the amendment reads House file, it should read Senate file 1959, and on line 1.2 where it says after line 13, it should be after line 14 so that it fits correctly in the
I'd incorporate those.
So those are incorporated in the motion. Any further discussion on the amendment?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, we were able to give this idea any kind of hearing in any of the policy committees, and I think we should take Mr. Weiberg's concerns. I don't know what the issue is, but I don't know if this is the place to be making this kind of change in the law here. So.
And
I would speak against the amendment.
And Representative Houseman. You were on the list.
Mr. Chair, my question was to the earlier testifier. What I heard the makers of the motion outline is a very real problem, and he is opposed to that, but I wonder if he sees their issue and would outline for us other ways to resolve it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I've already indicated that I've had communication with Thrifty White already. They've actually already submitted a variance request. The rule in question has not even taken effect. We had a hearing before an administrative law judge where these issues were fully discussed. The judge ruled in the board's favor, essentially. Those rules are probably going to be published in the State Register in about 2 to 3 weeks, and then they'll take effect. I've simply asked Thrifty White to wait until the rule's actually in effect so we can work with them to grant a variance. And we can work with any other organization that has a similar model. Our concern is that this language is going to be used by other entities that have other models, and we're going to have no control. You know, we certainly can go after organizations or pharmacies that break laws or rules, but that's a costly thing. We have to convene formal disciplinary hearings, and we have to pay the Attorney General's office for that. And we do try to work with people up front to prevent errors from happening and to work with them to address their concerns up front, so we don't have to have the cost of disciplinary proceedings.
So I think we actually are working with Thrifty White. But again, this law is, or this amendment, excuse me, would really be the one size fits all. If there's any central fill process out there, including one that is not used by Thrifty, that may not be as safe as what they're doing, this could be used by those entities to go ahead and get around what is probably the key rule, that one pharmacist takes responsibility at the end of the process to make sure that the whole process is done correctly. What's happening now, in some instances, is prescriptions are being scanned into computer systems. They're being transmitted to another pharmacy across the state. When the rules pass, it can be another pharmacy across the country. And at one pharmacist there might do what's called the drug utilization review. One technician might do the data entry. Then everything's sent back to the pharmacist in Minnesota who actually does the filling. And the variance that we unfortunately granted and that the professional staff was going to recommend to the board that they rescind for some of these situations basically says that last pharmacist only has to look at the name of the drug on the bottle and the drug in the bottle. They don't have to worry about whether the rest of the process was done correctly. And that's where the dispensing errors have come in. You know, the name of the drug in the bottle says Lipitor 10 milligrams, and that's what's in the bottle. So the final pharmacist says, oh, it's okay. But the technician 100 miles away should have read the prescription as Lipitor 20 milligrams, not 10. And so that's why we're opposed to this, is this might be a benefit to Thrifty White, and we're willing to work with them, but this just opens up just a whole can of worms.
Did we, Austin, does that answer your question? Do you have any more?
Well, I guess I didn't hear a solution. I heard your objection, but it's...
A solution to what issue, I guess?
What I heard the makers of the motion on the amendment lay out.
Mr. Weisberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, what I heard the maker of the motion lay out is that this is a problem for Thrifty White. Specifically, they mentioned this is a problem for Thrifty White, and this is going to cost them $1.1 million a year. So my solution is to work with them so they don't have that cost. And we have already been working with them so they don't have that cost. And I've said that we will work with any other organization that has a similar model to Thrifty White's as well.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why wouldn't we work this out before the rules went out instead of afterwards, and then and not have all these waivers? Why can't we figure out a way before those rules come out so that we don't have to have waivers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Otremba, it's because the profession of pharmacy is evolving almost faster than we can respond. There are new models of delivery systems coming out all the time, new technology coming out all the time, new automated dispensing systems. The rules that you write, if you gear it to specific models and specific systems, are obsolete almost before you can get through the rule hearing process. And that's why, you know, the board, since its existence, has always had the ability to grant variances to rules.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tremba.
This is basically a rural issue. And so I would really hope that we could work this out before we do rules, because, we're stuck in a piece in rural health care again, where we're being punished $1 million in Thrifty White, and I don't know how many other ones that are in that situation. But it is a different place, and we know that. And so why can't we work this rural piece out before the rule?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tremba, I'm not sure that this is a rural issue. I hate to disagree with you, but Thrifty White is a relatively moderately large sized regional chain. And their central fill facility is in Fargo. I know that they ship back to rural areas, this is not a strictly rural issue because, again, I get back to the point that 50s is only one model, and we are willing to work with them. But we have large national chains with thousands of pharmacies nationwide that want to carve up the prescription filling process so that parts of it are sent to Arizona and Nevada, and parts of it then are done here in Minnesota. So this is not just simply a rural issue. This could happen to anyone. Any patient in the state could go into a pharmacy now and have their prescription filled in multiple different places in these central fill models.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Trimba.
Maybe it's not everywhere, but it's definitely very, very prevalent in the rural areas. And so I would hope that we could sit down and do something ahead of time before the rules are in place, so that we don't have to go through variances and variances and variances.
Representative Restrom.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Weisberg, I agree with Representative Trimba, and I don't know why we'd just move ahead and then Representative Hausman asks you for the answer. It doesn't sound like you've thought about any solution other than will work. Well, in the legal world, agreeing to discuss something in the future is no deal. I mean, there's nothing legally binding about that. Unless you're telling us today you will be granting them a variance no matter what, it doesn't sound like anything's worked out. So I think we need to put this in place, and you guys need to get to the table and figure this out. You say you got 3 weeks before the rules are coming out. That's lots of time. And so I would support this amendment and urge members to, because as I read the amendment, it says it's been certified in a prior place. And so we aren't talking about some backroom filling operation here that is going on. And so I didn't hear an answer to your question from Representative Hausman either, and I think she gave you two cracks at answering it. And the only answer I heard was, we're willing to work with them or discuss this. Well, that's no comfort. No matter whether you're Board of Pharmacy or any agency, because that's no deal. There's no guarantee of anything being worked out.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond.
Mr. Weissman.
Prior to coming for the board, I worked for the Department of Human Services. I was a Medicaid Pharmacy Program Manager. So I've been involved in the legislative process for about 10 years. And I always thought, before I took my current position, that the job you folks had passing laws was incredibly complicated and difficult. Having gone through the rulemaking process, I can tell you that is every bit as complicated. The board has worked on this rule package for over 2.5 years. And it's gone, we had two advisory committees of pharmacists who looked at these rules. We had a hearing before the administrative law judge. The rulemaking manual in this state is over 300 pages long. If we were to start over now, we would not get it done in 3 weeks. It would take years. And in the meantime, people could get hurt. And the best we can do now is work with Thrifty on this variance. And we've done that in the past. With organizations, and all I can do is tell you that we will work with them. And that's all I have to say, I guess.
We have two more members that have questions, and we have caucus on our side of the aisle. It starts in 5 minutes. Mr. Anderson, very briefly. Yeah, I assume you're standing there because you would like to add to something that
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chair members. We're not asking to compromise patient safety. The amendment really reaches a compromise. It says that the pharmacist at the receiving end has to make sure that the prescription has been certified. So, in essence, there's always the guarantee that the pharmacist at the receiving end is going to make sure that a pharmacist at the other end checked it and made sure it was safe and it was proper and it was correct for the patient. As Mr. Weiberg suggests, our organizations are doing this, then they ought not be able to practice in Minnesota or sell drugs here. Our state actually encourages people to do mail order to save money. Well, there's no pharmacist at the other end checking that one either. So my suggestion is adopt the amendment. We'll continue to work with the Board of Pharmacy. But variances are also very expensive and very time-consuming, and that's the reason that we brought the amendment. We think it's a safe compromise and a good compromise for patients.
And Representative Thiessen?
I'll pass.
Representative Junkie?
Well, again, I want to get this motion moving. I concur with what Westrom and Mr. Anderson just said. There are towns all across. I mean, I'm doing it because Wilmer has a Thrifty White, but Alexandria, Hastings, Buffalo, New Ulm, and on, they all have Thrifty Whites. They are, as this amendment says, still going through a pharmacist at the other end who is checking to make sure that they were certified. So, if there's a problem, it just allows these people to continue doing what they've done for years and years and years. And I agree with Representative Otremba, too. This isn't going to be on the floor tomorrow. I would put it on, and then I'd ask the board and Representative Thiessen and Buzz Anderson and others, if there's a problem with it, to work it out. It certainly would change language at that time, but I think we need to put it on to make sure that, like Representative Otremba said, we're not losing money again. We're talking about health care costs. So I'd renew my motion, and hopefully you can support it at this time.
Just briefly, I would be curious to see what the Pharmacists Association says about this amendment, and we haven't heard from them. And it also says pharmacist or pharmacist intern, and I think that is a significant difference. I don't think it was quite as Mr. Anderson represented it, but I would, again, oppose the amendment.
Well, and again, Mr. Chair, I think a pharmacist intern is overseen by a pharmacist by law, too.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now have the bill before us as amended. Representative Huntley moves that Senate file 1959, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the General Register. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carried. We will take the last bill on the agenda and add it to the agenda tomorrow, because we do have to caucus in about 2 or 3 minutes. So with that, meeting adjourned.